I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. has taken possession of a North Korean cargo ship for violating international sanctions, a first-of-its-kind seizure that comes amid escalating tensions between the two countries over North Korea's nuclear weapons program. The Wise Onyx, North Korea's second-largest bulk carrier, was first seized by Indonesian authorities in April of 2018 as it was transporting 25,000 tons of high-grade coal valued at $3 million to Indonesia. Indonesian officials later turned over the ship to the U.S. last July. Officials said the vessel is now in U.S. custody and on its way to American Samoa, and they're seeking a civil injunction against it. U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators have ended the first of 2 days of talks aimed at saving a trade deal, even as the U.S. imposed heavier tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports. The tariffs went from 10% to 25% on Friday. The Trump administration is said to be trying to force changes in China's trade, subsidy, and intellectual property practices, something in which the president has talked about.
They couldn't have done what they're doing. They're building a ship every 3 weeks. They're building aircraft like you've never seen, fighter jets. I respect it. I don't blame them. I blame our past leadership.
The two sides have been unable to reach a deal due in part to differences over the enforcement of an agreement and a timeline for removing the tariffs. The Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman told reporters in Beijing Thursday that China would not bow to any pressure and warned it has the determination and ability to defend its own interest. The USS Abraham Lincoln Aircraft Carrier Strike Group and four B-52 bombers have all arrived in the Middle East region after concerns Iran may be planning an attack against American targets. The Carrier Strike Group completed its transit Thursday through the Suez Canal, according to a U.S. Central Command spokesman. This is VOA News. The 19-year-old suspect in last month's shooting at a Southern California synagogue has been charged with more than 100 federal hate crimes and civil rights violations. John Ernest has already pleaded not guilty to state murder and attempted murder charges in connection with the April 27th attack on a pop. And U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer says 109 hate crimes charges have been filed against the 19-year-old.
One count for every person in the synagogue on April 27th, including 12 children. Each of these counts is death penalty eligible, plus 54 counts of hate crime acts.
One person was killed, three others wounded, including an 8-year-old girl. President Trump has settled on Patrick Shanahan to lead the Department of Defense. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Rossi.
Patrick Shanahan appears to be in line to be President Donald Trump's second Secretary of Defense. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders released a statement saying Shanahan is beyond qualified to lead the Department of Defense and he will do an excellent job. The 56-year-old Shanahan has been serving as acting secretary since January 1st. The former Boeing executive, who served as deputy secretary for 2 years under Jim Mattis, is not known to face any organized opposition in Congress. Mike Gracia, Washington.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the nation is facing a constitutional crisis, and she's promising a methodical effort in having Congress pursue oversight of the Trump administration. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Pelosi says President Trump's finding new ways to obstruct lawmakers each day.
The president is almost self-impeaching.
But she's tamping down impeachment talk and instead previewing a long-game strategy for dealing with the White House.
We won't go any faster than the facts take us, or any slower than the facts take us.
Pelosi says there's no rush to have the full House vote on holding Attorney General William Barr in contempt. The House still wants to hear from Special Counsel Bob Mueller. The president tweeted a few days ago Mueller should not testify, but today reverted to his earlier statement.
I'm going to leave that up to the Attorney General.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. President Trump said Thursday that he was very surprised that the Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee subpoenaed his oldest son, Donald Trump Jr., for more testimony linked to the panel's investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. The U.S. leader said his son had already testified for nearly 20 hours. It was not immediately clear if Trump Jr. will comply with the subpoena, even though it was issued by the Republican-controlled congressional panel. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, May 10th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé has been given new mandates that could keep him in power until 2030.
This is not what people is asking for. People was asking for a reform that will prevent the current head of state from being candidate again in 2020.
Bridget Ajamabo-Johnson is the coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. Sierra Leone's president makes a late Thursday cabinet reshuffle. Uganda's prime minister says his government is willing to dialogue with the opposition. Rwanda talks security with the U.S. ambassador to Kigali. And Tanzania's opposition accuses the government of abducting and beating a critic of President Magufuli.
What convinces Chadema leadership to think that maybe the government has a hand on this thing, that all the people who are suffering from these signals and killing and shooting are people who are critical of the Magufuli government?
John Malia is head of legal affairs for Tanzania's opposition Chadema party. And experts say a recent spike in DRC Ebola cases is expected to get worse. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Faure Gnassingbé of Togo has been given new mandates that could keep him in power until 2030. The parliament approved a constitutional amendment that gave the president 2 5-year terms, but which do not apply retroactively. This means Mr. Gnassingbé can stand for the 2020 and 2025 elections. The parliament also gave lifetime immunity to all former presidents from being prosecuted for acts committed during their presidencies. Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson is the coordinator of the 14-party coalition that has led protests calling for President Gnassingbé's resignation as well as electoral reforms. She said she is disappointed in the parliament's decision.
I can say that this is not what people is asking for. People was asking for a reform that will prevent the current head of state from being candidate again in 2020. Because this regime has been governing Togo for more than 50 years. So today you can see that people feel very unhappy with what happened. However, we are still willing to continue the fight and finally in the year 2020, being able to change the regime.
Bridget, the issue of term limit was one of the concerns of the opposition. So does this mean that all the negotiations that the opposition was having with the government and ECOWAS, does this mean that all those negotiations failed?
You know, negotiation we had with the government on that facilitation of ECOWAS, we got a draft law that should be adopted by the assembly. But the assembly just decided to ignore this consensus and they've adopted something else that the government sent to them. This gives us the evidence that these assembly members who have been nominated finally made reform in a way that will be acceptable for the government.
Bridget, so what do you make of what the parliament did? They gave the president immunity for life.
This is something very unacceptable for us and for Togolese people. And we think that if we had to give this impunity to the president, it should be during political agreement.
I want to turn my attention to the opposition because I've talked to Togolese diaspora. Some of them were very angry with you, the opposition, suggesting that some of you have been even bought over by the government. So I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Well, I won't say that because when you live outside Togo, you cannot imagine the kind of difficulties that we are facing. And as far as I'm concerned, I can say that I stay very willing to continue this fight. This is a commitment that I took for many years, and I will not give up until the change I'm looking for a cure.
Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson is the coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lome. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party says police failed to investigate the alleged kidnapping of a member of the party who also happens to be a critic of President John Magufuli's administration, despite repeated calls by both party officials and diplomats. Opposition activist Mdude Nyagali, who was allegedly abducted by unknown persons last week, was found unconscious Wednesday near his hometown of Mbeya in southwest Tanzania. Supporters of the government have denied opposition accusations that the Magufuli administration continues to use state institutions to intimidate and harass critics. John Malia is head of legal affairs for the opposition Chadema Party.
I can confirm that a member of Chadema and a very activist in social media, particularly Twitter, going by the name of Mdude Chadema, was kidnapped 5 days ago from his office by these unknown kidnappers. I'm told they shot a bullet on the air to scare the people out, and they took him away, and Chadema leadership has been following up with the local police station, but they couldn't get appropriate cooperation. But I'm told that the police did not want to open a case file until they attempted a few more times to go and pursue the police to open an investigation file to find the whereabouts of the Chadema.
The police have denied that supporters of the government abducted the Chadema official, and that this is not the doing of the government to abduct people, and that the government is not cracking down on dissent. What do you say to that?
Okay, my reaction to that is that it has been the practice of police in Tanzania to say, no, we are not. But what convinces Chadema leadership to think that maybe the government has a hand on this thing is that all the people who are suffering from these kidnaps and killing and shooting are people who are critical of the Magufuli government. We have an example of Chief of the Parliament, the Honorable Tundu Lissu, who was shot 16 bullets when laying in his body. He was one of the strongest critics of the government. We have Alphonse Mawazo, who died, was murdered in Mwanza. He was opposing the CCM government. We have an example of Ben Sanane, who was kidnapped. A lot of other examples of people who were either kidnapped or tortured or injured. And the only thing that we know about the activity is that they have been criticizing the government.
Has your party taken a decision to engage the government to express concern about some of these happenings and resolve them accordingly?
The party has been doing that using various formal forums, including the parliament. But that has rendered into a deep fear of this regime. So we'll keep on doing that, but we won't keep quiet to send a message that the situation in Tanzania is worsening day by day.
John Malia is head of legal affairs for Tanzania's opposition Chadema Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Moshi in northern Tanzania. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 10th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Ugandan government officials say they are willing to dialogue with the opposition to create the political space for all citizens. Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda says the views of opposition politicians like Bobi Wine and Dr. Chisa Besigye are healthy for the nation. But as Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala, some analysts say the government should stop politicking and walk the walk.
Ugandan Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda says the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, NRM, is committed to democratic values. Rugunda says his government will continue holding meetings with other political parties in the country to ensure that both the opposition and the government can work side by side. Prime Minister Rugunda singled out main opposition leaders, parliamentarian Robert Chagron, popularly known as Bobi Wine, and former Forum for Democratic Change President Dr. Chiza Besigye's people whose views should be respected.
These are some of the most hard and most red Ugandans. So I think their views are really well understood. But that's why we're having IPOD, which is a body that brings together the political parties represented in parliament. And they are addressing all these issues at presidential level, at the levels of the secretaries general. We are going to have yet another meeting next week, and there's also going to be another summit of party leaders next week. All of these are aimed at getting political solutions for some of these irritants.
Frederick Kawoya works as a Democratic Governance Manager at international NGO ActionAid, says he doubts the government is committed to granting political space to the opposition.
If you look at the behavior of the security agencies, if you look at the restrictions in the media, I expect the party in power to come out and condemn some of those to demonstrate that spirit.
At times, opposition leaders in Uganda have been detained or arrested while intending to address or while addressing political rallies. Kasule Lumumba, the ruling party's secretary general, faults the laws in the country for the opposition's concerns.
If you observe, Bobi Wine has a constituency called Chadondo East. But under what law can he go to hold a political rally in outside his constituency? This is not in our law.
But Kawoya says the ruling party should be aware that the opposition views are very important for national building.
I think what we need to do is to create a culture of tolerance and accepting people to have their views without criminalizing dissent. And I think the day government realizes the value in allowing voices, dissenting voices, opinions, association, that is the time Ugandans will enjoy a democratic country that we aspire to live in.
Another issue that Kawoya says he wants to be addressed is enacting better electoral laws ahead of the 2021 elections. For VOA News, I am Ogume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio announced a cabinet reshuffle for late Thursday. The new list is subject to parliamentary approval. The major shakeup is in the foreign ministry, where Dr. Ali Kaba has been replaced by Mrs. Nambila Tunis. The reshuffle comes a little over a year since Maada Bio was elected president. Mohamed Rahman Swari is Sierra Leone's information minister.
You could recall that His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio, following his ascension to leadership, he put together a group of men and women. He has had over a year to work with that team to judge their every aspect of delivery. So it has pleased him today to effect a reshuffle. What does that mean? He is re-energizing the team. He's bringing on board new players with renewed vigor and vitality so that he's able to deliver on his manifesto commitments and on his various seat opening of parliament and promises to the nation.
Did President Maada Bio specifically give reasons behind his decision to reshuffle his cabinet this late night?
Well, it's important to note that our constitution gives the president the prerogative to hire and fire. He does not owe anybody an explanation. But it is important to note that his whole administration is predicated on a delivery mandate. So he wants to bring on board, you know, men and women who help re-energize the team with the right competencies, the right skill sets, the right experience, and what it takes to deliver for our country.
So if I may ask you, who was moved where? And were there some ministers who were dropped entirely from cabinet?
Yes, from the list that have been published thus far, there are very interesting surprises. The former Minister of Development and Economic Planning, Maranaf Nabila Tunis, has been moved on to the Foreign Ministry. It's important to note that Madam Tunis presided over the development of the medium-term development framework. She has put together a new donor engagement framework and many others in this 1 year. That is something that has won the trust of not only the government, but also members of the international development community. So I believe she will be quite a breath of fresh air in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Deputizing her will be my former deputy, a lawyer, Mr. Salomon Jamil, of no mean repute. I will miss him very, very much. But I know he will be quite a major asset in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Again, you talk about the Ministry of Economic Planning and Development. It's now going to be headed by Dr. Francis Kaikai, who has over 25 years stint in the development arena. He presided over the development of the Poverty Reduction Strategy Paper 1 and 2, and until his appointment, he was a permanent representative to the United Nations. He presided over the disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration of ex-combatants, so he is no stranger to Sierra Leone politics. So this is a full package.
Mohamed Rachman Suare is Sierra Leone's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital of Freetown. Rwanda's Senate on Thursday held discussions with the U.S. Ambassador to Kigali, Peter Vrume. The president of the Senate asked for United States help to deal with anti-Rwanda groups like the FLN rebels operating in neighboring countries. Yuji Wimana has details from Kigali.
The discussions focused on peace and security, economic growth, inclusive development, as well as democracy and human rights, which, according to Vrooman, are four key goals of the U.S. mission in Rwanda. Rwanda Senate President Bernard Makuza said he raised the issue of regional security because it is a threat to all countries in the region. We briefed him as well about terror groups in the region like FDLR and the people that are supporting them. We discussed this because it is not something that a person can keep quiet about, since the security of one country is connected to another one's safety. And this can get worse when the international community stays quiet on it. In addition to regional security, Makuza said, Rwanda also wants U.S. help in capturing several genocide perpetrators who, he said, are still moving freely around the world. Ambassador Peter Vrooman did not comment on Rwanda's request to help capture alleged genocide perpetrators, but he said his country salutes Rwanda for efforts made thus far towards what he calls incredible development after 25 years.
We'll help retain for Rwandans in the future the artifacts of the people who perished. So the preservation of this is critical for future generations.
Security was also the mind of President Paul Kagame during season outreach visit to the northern province, which neighbors Uganda. Relations between the two countries have soared for past 2 years. Those enemies who live outside of the country, we only give it time to capture them. Some hunt themselves and we solve their problems. For others, they are brought unknowingly. That's why I say that the first way of peace is peace or fight, and we have force. They have to know that they are playing with the fire to be burnt. Rwanda made progress recently in its against rebel groups by its captured recently of Major Calixte Sankara, the spokesperson of the FLN, which Rwanda calls a terror group. Jean Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
The recent spike in Ebola cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo could get worse because, according to healthcare responders, many cases reported now are coming from unknown contacts or reporting too late. Anthony Bonemo is the Ebola Emergency Response Chief for the healthcare NGO Alima. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the outlook.
There is a link, a new chain of contamination in Beni and the other zone around Beni. In February, we had more than 3 weeks without patients in Beni. But in March, with the situation of Butembo and Katwa, with the there is this hotspot over there, the movement of the population reactivated the new contamination chain in Beni. So in April, we had 34 confirmed patients in Beni center. So it was the second biggest month for our activity since August last year.
How many cases in general are not coming from known contacts, and what does this mean for the likelihood of an increase in cases in the future?
So today, we, depending during the week, we can have some security incidents, so and it disturb the follow-up of contacts. But those last days, we have only, I can say, 65% of confirmed cases were in the follow-up of contacts. So it means it's between 30 and 40% are not inside this follow-up. And it's also a problem if we look on the data of the confirmed cases we are confirmed by the laboratory, because 2 days ago on the 15 patients, confirmed patients for 1 day, 11 was dead before they arrived to the center.
And this kind of information means there will likely be new cases in the near future, right?
Yes, the problem is because of the this We miss a lot of people and the follow-up, and it means we are very far behind the outbreak. And so it's possible in the next 2, 3, or 4 weeks we will have maybe more and more new cases coming.
What activities have been suspended or have slowed down in certain areas, and how is that affecting the outbreak?
Regarding Beni, today the situation is calm. But the problem is more focused on the area of Butembo, Katwa, and all around.
Anthony Bonemo is the Ebola Emergency Response Chief for the healthcare NGO Alima. He spoke to Ricky Shryak. Time now for Daybreak Africa's Post. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where the Nigerian Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick and four other top-ranking officials have been charged with corruption, including embezzlement of millions of dollars from World Football Governing Body FIFA. In athletics news, World Marathon and Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge says his move to skip the World Championships and make a second attempt at running a marathon under 2 hours is spurred by the urge to test the human body and not the money involved.
It's not about breaking the 2 hour mark. It's about actually sending the message to the whole human family that no human is limited. And you can go beyond any borders, be it in sport, be it in any profession. That's the message you are passing.
The Iranian Olympic champion broke the world record in September 2018 during the Berlin Marathon when he clocked 2 hours, 1 minute, 39 seconds. Staying with athletics news, three top female athletes have withdrawn from the South African women's team that will do battle at a world relays in Japan this week. And Athletics South Africa said in a statement on Thursday that they will make no replacements. And staying with South Africa, a maiden hot trick by Mazabata Klaas, coupled with Laura Lovaldet's 13th career half century, helped the women's cricket team, the Proteas women, deliver the perfect response after they leveled their 3-match one-day international series with Pakistan, thanks to an 8-wicket win in Potchefstroom. Mazabata Klaas is Proteas women's medium bowler, and Laura Vondervat is Proteas women's batsman.
I think it's all because of my teammates and the hard work that I put behind closed doors. I think we played very good cricket today, so I'm looking forward for the next game.
I think there was a bit of pressure on our batting unit coming into this game, I'm not going to lie. You know, getting bowled out for 60 is a bit ridiculous, like the first game, and it was just good to come and show today that that's not our usual standard, and it's very important that we chase the score down with quite a few wickets in hand. So I guess that's just the mindset that I had going in, to really take my time up front and to really assess the conditions properly before I tried anything drastic, because we weren't chasing a huge total, so you're allowed to take your time a little. So I guess that's what I try to do.
And finally, in boxing news, former World Boxing Organization super bantamweight champion Ghanaian Isaac Rolston Daube is set to take on Emmanuel Navarrete in their crunch rematch at the convention center in Tucson, Arizona on Saturday.
Yeah, this should be another walk in the park. Though, looking at Navarrete's track record, you know, he could be he's a dangerous opponent, but we can pull it off.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, May 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
African music hits.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special. Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.